Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Listeners, every Thursday night during President Biden's first 100 days in office, I'm hosting a series of call-in specials called America, Are We Ready? And we've been having such good discussions with our guests and with callers from across the country that we want to share them with you on this podcast feed. So here's this past Thursday's America, Are We Ready? I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. This is a Saturday special. From WNYC Radio, with studios located on Muncie-Lenape territory, also known as Lower Manhattan in New York City, it's America, Are We Ready? A Thursday night national call-in show for the first 100 days of the Biden presidency. This is day 44. And the music behind me is from the new album called I Pray for My Enemies. It's by the U.S. Poet Laureate, Joy Harjo, who happens to be Native American, a member of the Muscogee Nation. We'll talk to her in just a minute as the first guest on tonight's show. Then later we'll cover the news today that Congresswoman Deb Haaland of New Mexico is pretty much assured now of becoming the first Native American cabinet secretary in U.S. history, as her nomination to be Interior Secretary got out of committee and with two Republican votes this afternoon. We'll take your calls later, too, on President Biden's promise to change the federal relationship with Native tribes. But hold off on the calls for now. We'll give out the number in a few minutes. After we spend a few minutes with U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, the first Native American to serve in that position, she was appointed to it in 2019. Joy, it is always a joy to speak with you. Thank you for joining us on America, Are We Ready?
Yes, thank you so much for having me on again. It's nice to be here.
And just to talk about the track that we were listening to, I read that you didn't start learning the saxophone until you were around 40. Is that right? And what inspired you to take it up relatively late in life to start learning an instrument?
Yes, most people don't do that. And I always loved the sound of the saxophone. And when I was in junior high, I wanted to play sax, and the band teacher wouldn't let girls play sax, so I walked away from music. So I picked it up again. I like the sound of the voice, and I've always loved jazz as well as many other kinds of music.
And we'll sample from a part of that song that has your lyrics coming up later in the segment. But can you talk about the title of both the track and the album, which sounds like something Joe Biden might say, actually, I Pray for My Enemies.
Yes, I could be pretty loaded. Yeah, that's the name of the album, I Pray for My Enemies, and it comes from a poem called This Morning I Pray for My Enemies, about one of those moments when you go out and you're upset, and the poem goes, you know, the door to the mind should only open from the heart. And it's really about, prayer is, I think of, you know, every moment can be, everything we say or speak, or John Coltrane, the saxophone player extraordinaire, was often spoke about how, you know, his music was essentially a prayer. And so the whole album, or the music and the poem, has to do with, you know, wait a minute, we're all in this together. That you might be standing across from me, but we're all standing here. We're all here on earth. We're standing all together in a circle, literally in a circle, the circle of, or a globe, called the earth.
And in your track by track notes for the album, you write, ultimately, we are one person, which is what COVID taught us or is teaching us. What do you mean one person in that context of COVID?
It's, I don't know if you remember, but when that image of NASA was released of the earth as a being, a beautiful blue and green being that looked like it was breathing, There it is. I mean, there's the larger context. You look and it's one person, and we're all, you know, we all have a part. We all have a part of the story in this place. And you cannot, from that context, from that worldview, we are one person.
And you write, our differences give life, add story, We in all our diversity are one. And it's very American in a certain way, very e pluribus unum, you know, to see diversity as unifying rather than dividing. People so often see it as divisive these days. Can you elaborate on that line from your notes?
Okay. Yes. I mean, ultimately, it is, you know, let's see. Ask me that again. I was trying to find another way into it.
Well, just the idea of the beautiful line that you wrote of we in all our diversity are one. So the diversity, how the diversity unites people.
Yes, because, I mean, think about it. I remember once when I was about, you know, in sixth grade, and I decided I had a whole box of crayons in different colors. And I thought, this is so cool. I'm going to melt them all together and see what color, you know, it makes. And I melted them down and watched as they melted and they turned into a big clump of gray. But individually, they all had, they were all different colors. And then when, you know, I kept going and learned color theory, and there's oppositions. There's color, you know, there's people that complement us. There's other people that are oppositional. And often it's those moments and those people who are oppositional who have the most to teach us.
Huh. Now, people who don't know you can already tell from this conversation, I think, that you're a very spiritual person and in touch with nature. And some of the other song titles on the album are Calling the Spirit Back, Why Is Beauty, One Day There Will Be Horses, and How Love Blows Through the Trees. And I'm curious, are you also political in a way that would allow you to say what your hopes and dreams are for a presidency that wants to be responsive to Native American concerns, or can't a poet laureate do that?
Well, I think I had many great teachers and mentors coming up as a poet and a musician. And every one of them, in some way or the other, made the statement that there's no separation between the personal and the political. You know, somebody who was it that says, you know, you can't play it. It won't come out of your horn. Is that Miles Davis? It won't come out of your horn unless you've lived it. And, of course, you know, we're living, everything is political. You know, every field has terrible in politics. So, yes, I mean, I think what I've learned is that, one, the stories in a way are, the stories don't change that much. The details might change through the years, but, you know, it's often the same kinds of themes that keep coming up over and over. And, you know, it sometimes gets despairing, like watching all of this come down this summer, the divisiveness and the racial hatred when, you know, in my generation, you know, I guess we thought we had at least made inroads, and then here we are again watching kind of the same issues playing out, you know, in the story field, in the contemporary American story field, over and over again. And yet there's changes made. There's little moments of miracles where people connect and people open.
Joy, you might have heard that I opened with what's known as an indigenous land acknowledgement, saying that our studios are located in Muncie Lenape territory, also known as Lower Manhattan. And that's happening more frequently these days in some media, like the public radio show On Being does that, and elsewhere in the arts. Do you find the land acknowledgments meaningful?
They can be. I had to do an opening for an event yesterday, and I did probably about half of it talking about really what a land acknowledgement is. It's a moment of respect saying, this is where we are. We're all here together, like right now. We're here together. I'm in the Muscogee Creek Nation in Tulsa. You are there in the Lenape area, and there's listeners all over. But here we are in this moment, and so let's just take a moment to remember, to respectfully, that we are on these incredible lands that give us everything, And that part of the story, the original keepers of these lands are indigenous peoples. And, you know, we're still here. We still are charged with keeping these lands, with making sure that there's balance on these lands. And that's how I see a land acknowledgement, to acknowledge that, because in the predominant story of America and the predominant contemporary culture of America, you'd never see natives. We are not visible, and we might be standing right next to you, or eating lunch next to you, and we're not visible. There's a guitar player, Larry Mitchell, I played with off and on for years, and he grew up in Bed-Stuy, and he said, yeah, when he was going to school, they said in his classroom that the Indians had all been killed. That there were none. There were no natives anymore.
And so he didn't know. And so I guess that's one of the things that you bring to the country by being the first Native American poet laureate.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I mean, it certainly opened that door of awareness, and you know, as to say, wait a minute. There are natives here, and there's native poets, and it looks like we're going to have the first Secretary of Interior as a native woman. I mean, how amazing is that?
We're going to be talking a lot about Deb Holland with our next guest and our callers coming up in just a minute. What would that mean to you, briefly?
Well, it's quite. It's quite amazing, and I've known Deb for some time. She was my poetry student. Most people don't know that.
Oh, wow.
Yes, when I was teaching at one point, as every once in a while I'll take a teaching gig, and then I let it go because I'm too busy with my other work. But she came in. I remember she came into my office carrying a motorcycle helmet, and asked to be, you know, led into my creative writing class, creative writing poetry. And I had room. I said, sure. And she was a very good student, and even worked for me briefly, you know, as an assistant. And I came to, you know, and she always had what she had in mind. And here she was with
10 seconds.
Okay. Is that, she was always concerned about conservation, about people, about the preservation.
We will definitely talk about all of those coming right up. And listeners, after the break, we'll talk about the nomination of Deb Holland being approved by a Senate committee today and what it might mean for the environment, public lands, jobs in the fossil fuel industries, and Native American quality of life if she does become fully confirmed. And as we say goodbye to U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, Joy, thank you so much.
We'll
go
thank
out
you.
With a little bit of that title track from her new album, I Pray for My Enemies. From WNYC in New York, this is America, Are We Ready?, a Thursday night national call-in show for the first 100 days of the Biden presidency here on day 44. I'm Brian Lehrer, and tonight it's America, Are We Ready? For a new relationship between the United States government and the people who lived here first and the lands they still live on. With today's vote in the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, we're headed toward having our first ever Native American Cabinet Secretary, Deb Holland. She is currently a member of Congress and a Native American first in that position, too. Two Native American women were elected as the first Native Americans ever in Congress in 2018. She's from New Mexico. And this is part of what Biden promises will be a long overdue corrective.
Federal government has long broken promises to Native American tribes who've been on this land since time immemorial. With her appointment, Congresswoman Holland will help me strengthen the nation-to-nation relationship.
We'll also get into questions of fossil fuel drilling, something that currently employs a lot of people, including on Native lands, and that President Biden has put a moratorium on, at least for new drilling leases on purely federal lands. Deb Haaland's nomination was controversial in part because she supports that moratorium. And with me now, as your calls are coming in, is Julian Brave Noisecat, Vice President of Policy and Strategy with the progressive think tank Data for Progress. He's the Narrative Change Director of the Natural History Museum, an artist and activist collective, that is, and a fellow at the Type Media Center, NDN Collective, and the Center for Humans and Nature. He also wrote a Washington Post op-ed last month called Why Senate Republicans Fear Deb Haaland. Julian, nice to talk to you again. Welcome to America, Are We Ready?
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Brian. Excited for it.
And I see that when I search for you on Twitter, Julian, the first thing that comes up is hashtag Deb for Interior. So this nomination matters to you. Tell us why.
I think to understand why this nomination is so important for me, for Native people across the country, and also I think for our nation's history, you have to really understand what the Interior Department is and what it has done historically to Native people. So the third Interior Secretary, a guy named Alexander Stewart, once described his mission and the United States mission as, quote, to civilize or exterminate Native people. And, you know, in many ways, the Interior Department was core to that mission throughout the United States history, whether we're talking about the Dawes Act in the late 1800s, which took millions of acres of land from Native nations, the boarding schools that took Native children away to assimilate them and often to quite literally beat their language and culture out of them, or the termination era in the mid-1900s when the United States' stated policy towards Native nations was literally termination, was to legally revoke our sovereign status. And against that history, you know, Deb Haaland is obviously the first Native American to be nominated to be the Interior Secretary. She's actually even the first Native American to ever be chosen for a presidential cabinet. And when she showed up for her Senate confirmation hearing last Tuesday, she introduced herself in her family's language, the Karis language. It's a Pueblo language. And also acknowledged that the hearing was taking place on the homelands of the Piscataway people here in what is now Washington, D.C. And I think that, you know, just those, that deep and painful history juxtaposed with that pride in the fact that, you know, Stewart and the countless other bureaucrats and government officials who tried to carry out that mission of Indigenous annihilation failed, I think is just a very powerful statement of what this nomination means and what Deb Haaland means to Native people and also, I think, to the United States as a whole.
I have a few clips from Congresswoman Haaland's confirmation hearing. You wrote about some of these in your Washington Post op-ed. Here's 16 seconds of Haaland responding to a question from Republican Senator Jim Risch of Idaho about why she supports President Biden's suspension of the Keystone XL pipeline from Canada.
One of the reasons why is that I support President Biden. I think he's thought deeply about these things, and I think that he cares deeply about our environment, and I do as well.
So that's one. And here's Congresswoman Haaland responding to a question on why she supports the president's moratorium on new oil and gas drilling leases on federal lands.
Senator, it's my understanding that there is only a pause on the new leases for the new gas and oil leases. Currently, the existing valid leases are moving forward. Permitting is moving forward. I understand that. I know that the department currently is moving those permits forward. I don't know all the particulars of every permit that's been signed, but I know that President Biden isn't looking to shut everything down. The existing permits and leases will continue.
Yeah, but no new ones.
There is a pause on the new ones.
And Julian, I'm going to get your take on those clips in a minute, but I want to go to our first caller first. And it is Sunny in Deb Haaland State, New Mexico. Hi, Sunny. You're on America, Are We Ready?
Good evening, Yat'e, to all of you who are listening. It's a privilege and an honor to know that the Department of Interior is going to be represented and managed and, you know, organized from the perspective of a Native American and specifically a woman. Many Native nations across North and Southern Hemisphere were matrilineal since time immemorial. And I think this is a perfect opportunity to finally hear the Native voice, because we have been here for forever, but we're always left out of the vital conversations regarding equity and equality and all of those kinds of things. And I did meet Congresswoman Holland before she was political. She's a genuine, absolutely genuinely beautiful individual that is spiritually grounded and culturally intact. And that's the kind of person that it's going to take for all of the United States to understand that we have got to reconfigure our thought processes regarding earth, land, water, air, all of the elements that give us life and breath.
Sunny, do you want to say anything about your particular background and what you think a positive set of federal policies could bring to the people who you descend from?
Well, I am a member of the Diné Navajo Nation in the Four Corners region of the United States. And we have been devastated by the pandemic and COVID, and we are doing our best to survive. 135 members of our nation, 135,000 members of our nation have been vaccinated. So I'm really, really glad about that. There's no real apprehension about being vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And that's going to give us the opportunity to survive, because I think that it has, you know, the virus all over has exposed every yuck that exists in the systems that are functioning or not functioning. And so I think Ms. Holland's voice in this particular administration is only positive in every regard.
Thank you so much for your call. I really, really appreciate it. Listeners, 844-745-TALK, 844-745-8255. First priority on the phones, but not only priority, but first priority to anyone else who's from a Native American background and wants to talk about what a new federal relationship, nation to nation, as President Biden put it, could be if he keeps his promises. 844-745-TALK, 844-745-8255. As we continue with Julian Rave Noisecat from Data for Progress. But let's go to another caller, Damani in Brooklyn. You're on America Are We Ready? Hi, Damani.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show. I called in because I have both Cherokee and Blackfoot Native blood in my family. And as a child for a long time, I would always make it a point to say that I had that Native American heritage, because there were so few of us, and we weren't really talked about. Our heritage wasn't studied or taught. And so I thought that it was really important to let people know that we're still here. I called in because I think that this is an incredible opportunity that Biden has put forth for Ms. Howard. And I really believe that her being in this position not only, you know, represents the sensibilities of Mother Earth, how the first people see the planet and our surroundings, and how we are nurturing and have been the caregivers of this great land for hundreds and hundreds of years before, you know, anyone ever landed on Plymouth Rock, so to speak. And the fact that we have, you know, been so marginalized here with this great platform, with a wonderful person at the helm to really take care of the interior, is just, I just think it couldn't have been a better time. Obviously, the sooner the better. But I think that if Biden can show his support and steadfast behind the decisions that she makes, that will show a real commitment to the rekindling of the federal relationship and the indigenous people of America. Thank you so much.
Damani, thank you so much for your call. And Julian Brave Noise Cat, you want to reflect on those callers we just heard?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really wonderful to hear Sunny speak her Navajo language. I'll give it my best shot and I'll say Yate and Ahiahat for what you said, Sunny. I'm obviously not Diné, but I've picked up a few words here and there in my reporting and travels, and have some relatives in the Indian way, not in the blood relation, but in people who I consider family from the Navajo Nation. And it's really great to hear those words. It was also really great to hear from Damani in Brooklyn, and you know, just the, I think that you can hear when people, especially Native people, talk about this nomination, just how much it means to people, just in the sound of their voice, right? It's taken over 230 years, almost 230 years for us to get to this point where a Native person would be in the executive in the country that was built on the lands that were taken from us. And obviously that's far too long. But also, you know, I think that we have so much hope in Secretary-designate Holland, you know, in the poise that she carried herself in those hearings, and in her commitment, you know, in the fact that she, you know, went to the camps in the path of the Dakota Access Pipeline in 2016 and cooked green chili stew and tortillas for water protectors. I think that, you know, both in her words and her actions throughout her life, she's really shown that, you know, her commitment to our people and to representing us well. And I think the fact that, you know, she's so visible, is also going to mean that she's going to be able to show real leadership at Interior. You know, what she does is going to matter because she's the first Native person in the cabinet. And I think that gives me a great deal of hope that she's going to be able to stick her neck out every once in a while and, you know, do things that need to be done.
We played those clips of Congresswoman Holland supporting the Keystone XL pipeline cancellation by President Biden, and his moratorium on new oil and gas drilling leases on federal lands. Julian, do you see these as important climate issues, Native American issues, or both?
Certainly both. You know, the Keystone XL pipeline poses a threat to the climate in that it would lock us into a future of emissions. When we build new infrastructure for fossil fuels, that means that those energy sources are going to be used far into the future because they're sunk costs, they're sunk investments to those corporations. And, you know, the fact that pipeline is not going to be built, you know, moves us just a little bit closer to a transition to clean energy. And I think that at the end of the day is a good thing. You know, I think that we do need to reckon with the fact that there are lots of workers who played a really central role in building this country and building it on fossil fuels. And we need to certainly make sure that we take care of them and make sure that they can get good, often unionized jobs in the sort of energy system of tomorrow. And I think that's a totally important thing. And then, of course, I think the part about this that is also really exciting to me is that, you know, in our various social movements, whether it be the No DAPL movement, the No Keystone XL movement, before those, the Idle No More movement, which predominantly arose in Canada in the early 2010s, Native people have been leading the charge for environmental and climate justice. And I think that those movements are now, reaching some of the highest echelons of governance in this country. And what is very exciting to me is a new era that could be emerging here, where Native rights and sovereignty and governance are seen as not just benefiting Native people, but as benefiting all people through, general goods and universal goods like environmental protection.
Listeners, will continue in a minute on America, Are We Ready? We'll take more of your phone calls. Anyone with an interest in the nomination of Deb Haaland to be Interior Secretary or the land issues we've just been talking about, or anyone with a Native American background of any kind on what new relationship you hope President Biden brings to your nation or tribe, 844-745-TALK, 844-745-8255, as America Are We Ready continues. From WNYC in New York, this is America Are We Ready, a Thursday night national call-in show for the first 100 days of the Biden presidency. Here on day 44, I'm Brian Lehrer. Tonight, it's America Are We Ready for a new relationship between the United States government and the people who lived here first and the land they still live on. Our phones remain open with first priority this hour for anyone who is a member of a Native American tribe or nation, or anyone with an interest in the nomination of Deb Haaland to be Interior Secretary, or the land use issues we've been talking about that she will oversee, 844-745-TALK, 844-745-8255. And here is Deb Haaland at her confirmation hearing saying why she wants to be Interior Secretary.
One of my dear friends in Iambito Navajo Nation, Albert Shirley, he listens to this hearing on the radio, a radio I bought him that's powered by the sun because he doesn't have electricity. And he texted me this morning and said the name, the Navajo code talkers, the first word they decided to use when they were working on the code was Nihima. And that means our mother. And that was the code they used for the United States of America. And I feel very strongly that that sums up what we're dealing with. This is all of our country. This is our mother. You've heard the earth referred to Mother Earth. It's difficult to not feel obligated to protect this land. And I feel that every indigenous person in this country understands that, which is why we have such a high rate of our people who serve in the military. We want to protect this country.
Deb Haaland from her confirmation hearing. The Energy and Natural Resources Committee approved her nomination today. And still with us, Julian Brave Noisecat, Vice President of Policy and Strategy with the progressive think tank Data for Progress and Narrative Change Director of the Natural History Museum and author of a Washington Post op-ed last month called Why Senate Republicans Fear Deb Haaland. And let's go back to the phones. Gina in Northfield, Minnesota. You're on America Are We Ready? Hi, Gina.
Hi, Brian. How are you? Thank you so much for this. I'm going to just, I'm a non-Native person, so I'm only going to speak to the question, which was, what is it that we would like to see the Biden administration do, especially with Deb Haaland's appointment? And I think that the issue that we are concerned with in our state of Minnesota is the Line 3. It's the replacement and expansion of that line that will be moving tar sands out of Canada across Native American treaty lands to one of the Great Lakes. It is very deeply concerning because of the transit and the desecration of land and also the potential for environmental damage. Enbridge is a company out of Canada, not an American corporation, and I have been a legal observer during the protests against Line 3 and have observed the scorched earth sacrilege of the land that was once forested and rivered. And all I can say is we hope that the Biden administration will address this issue.
Gina, thank you very much for weighing in on that. Marion in New York City via Washington State says, Marion, hi, you're on America. Are we ready?
Hi. I am my husband, who is a professional essential worker and at work, is Clinkett Haida. And I'm sure your guest knows his great aunt is Elizabeth Paradovich. And you know who Elizabeth Paradovich is, correct?
Actually, sir? I'm not familiar.
Oh, well, and this is speaks to the point of this discussion. Elizabeth Paradovich was honored by the United States government this year by having the United States Mint strike the latest silver dollar in her honor. Sacagawea is on the reverse for her leadership in attaining the very first anti-discrimination law in the history of the United States in 1945, several years before Brown v. Board. So I would like all your listeners to be aware of the lack of knowledge of that. I have a number of objections with regard to federal government Indian affairs with Deb Haaland's nomination. But the first and most important thing is the very carefully crafted statement by Joe Biden, which you played, Brian, at the very beginning, mm-hmm. which was that he said the native peoples have been on this land since time immemorial. That is very carefully crafted, rather than saying native peoples own this land. Native peoples were not on this land. That has been a constant theme of the federal government since the federal government expropriated lands from Native people. With regard to Deb Haaland, Deb Haaland, to my knowledge, did not grow up on a reservation. She grew up on a series of military bases. And as Morgan Freeman would say about Barack Obama is a mixed race person. As is Deb Haaland, and we unfortunately still have a one drop rule, in the United States, something that Joe Biden has prided himself on, in the rest of his cabinet appointment is that he has chosen career professionals for their expertise in their field, and their career service in the federal government. In their selection for their cabinet appointments as secretaries. The big problem with the federal government and its history with Native people in the corruption in every aspect, BIA, Bureau of Land Management, Interior, is politics. And what did he do? He picked a politician.
Marion, I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to give Julian Brave Noisecat a chance to comment on any of that. I think she's a little skeptical of Congresswoman Haaland for being a politician in this admittedly political position of U.S. Interior Secretary that she's headed to. I think Marion wanted something else.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's reasonable for people to be skeptical of politicians given the state of our politics. You know, I think that there's a couple of things here. Firstly, I think that the truth of the matter is that part of the reason why Congresswoman Haaland is now Secretary Designate Haaland is that she is, in fact, a very effective politician. You know, at the same time as she's a member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, who has gotten support of very left groups like the Sunrise Movement and the Justice Democrats, you know, she's also liked by members of the Congressional Republican Caucus. You know, Don Young from Alaska, no liberal, introduced her at the Senate Energy and Natural Resource Committee hearing last week. And, you know, I think that that's in large part a testament to how effective Congresswoman Haaland is at politics. And I think that it's reasonable to be skeptical of politics, but I think it's also, in this instance, you know, just a fact that the Congresswoman would not be breaking this barrier for our people if it were not for, you know, her savviness and skills as a legislator, as a politician, as a policymaker, all of those things. And of course, you know, people wanted to fight for her. She was not the first and obvious pick for someone like Biden, who probably would have been more comfortable going with, you know, someone from his inner circle for this role. And for all those reasons, I think that I view her political skill set as an asset. You know, I think that it's also reasonable to reckon with the history of the Interior Department, which, as I mentioned at the beginning of this program, has not exactly had a great and friendly relationship to Native people and Native nations, and to ask, you know, what the constraints are of the political systems and government institutions that Holland is stepping into and leading. But at the end of the day, I am hopeful that, you know, having someone with her values, with her set of experiences, you know, she may have grown up as a military brat, but, you know, she went to Mesita on the Laguna Pueblo to visit her grandmother a lot when she was a child. They had no running water or electricity at Mesita. She, has tended to traditional corn gardens. She, you know, cooks for Pueblo feast days. She has memories from her childhood of going to various traditional dances that she's shared with me. And, you know, in many ways, I think that experience, you know, maybe perhaps not growing up on the reservation, but certainly having deep, deep familial ties to it is common to many Native people. You know, 70% of Native people actually live in cities. And I think that that's very representative of, her experience. I personally see it as very representative of our experience as it exists today.
Let's take another caller. Here's a listener calling us, Old Mr. Al from Atlanta. Hello, Old Mr. Al. You're on America. Are We Ready?
How are you doing?
Pretty well, I
Great.
Hope. And I yourself?
Hope. Yes, I'm doing very well, and I'm really enjoying your show. I tried to call before, and I thought it was probably pre-recorded, but I'm such enjoying this tonight. I'm in one of the houses that we're renovating in Southwest Atlanta, mm-hmm. and I'm just, my heart is just, I'm like, let me try, maybe. And sure enough, I got through. It's live.
I'm glad you got through this week. Go ahead.
They call me us an African Americans here in Atlanta, but really, our Native Americans that were here 16 to 24,000 years before so-called Columbus came and discovering something is like me coming to your house and discovering your house that you've had for years and then shoot you in the head and say, give Thanksgiving. And this, tonight's show shows me that we're in a time now where the aboriginals that have been in North America and South America for thousands of years, it is their time. We're in the time of Aquarius. I'm 67 years old, older than the trees and older than the dirt. And I've learned so much in the last 50 years, and we owe so much to the humble original people that were here. And when Columbus came, you had beautiful crops everywhere and animals growing everywhere, fertile land everywhere, and clean water from the rain everywhere. And within 400 years, those that call themselves civilized have, the water is polluted, the air is polluted, the food and the soil is polluted. So it shows that God's Israel that came here 16 to 24,000 years ago with the Ice Age during the Bering Strait, were the original people that God sent here in this New Jerusalem. And the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And what I like tonight, this old man's heart, who have kids and grandkids, and I'm teaching them, we owe a lot to those that were here in so-called North America before Columbus came and thought he discovered something that was already civilized. They were called the Creeks, the Seminoles, the Cherokee, the Chickasaw, the Memphis, the Alabama, and I can go on and on. These were civilized people that were hooked up not only to the land, but hooked up to the Most High Creator. And they came here because, yes, this is the New Jerusalem, and nothing shall destroy it. And I'm glad to hear shows like this.
We had the U.S. Poet Laureate at the beginning of the hour, and now I can say we have had the Poet Laureate of this segment of the show, old Mr. Al from Southwest Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you so much for calling in. That was wonderful.
We got to get Mr. Al on the show. That was awesome.
We've got a few minutes left. Julian, your Washington Post op-ed was called Why Republicans Fear Deb Haaland, and yet she did get two Republican votes in the committee today that approved her nomination and sent it to the full Senate, Susan Collins from Maine and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, whose state, of course, has a lot of oil drilling. Why do you think?
Well, you know, Senator Murkowski's state certainly has a lot of oil drilling, and it puts, when there's not a pandemic recession, it puts a decent amount of money in every Alaskan's pocket every year through a dividend that they have that's funded from oil and gas revenues. But it also is the state with the most Native voters as a portion of its population of any other state. And actually, there's a very interesting political history here where Senator Murkowski actually lost her primary in 2010 to a right-wing challenger, a guy named Joe Miller, Tea Party candidate, and then ran a successful write-in campaign. She's actually one of only two U.S. senators to ever win a write-in campaign, the other one being Strom Thurmond, of all people. And she won that campaign with a significant turnout and support from Alaska Natives. And so Murkowski actually, you know, was kind of squeezed between a major industry of her state and a major base of her political support in her state. And so I think it was very interesting to see her support Congresswoman Haaland's nomination. I actually wrote a story about this for Politico magazine about a week and a half ago. And then Collins, does not have as significant a Native presence in the state of Maine, but she does have a significant not insignificant amount of Native people in Maine. And I know that they were reaching out to her and asking her to support Congresswoman Haaland's historic nomination. So, although Native people often aren't seen, particularly in politics, most people don't ever think about Native voters. Native people actually can be significant political players. And I think that was a big part of the story of why Deb Haaland has gotten Republican support, despite the fact that she's a progressive.
And in our last 45 seconds or so, why did you call your article Why Republicans Fear Deb Haaland?
The secret is I don't usually choose the headlines.
Every writer's secret. Is it their ties to the oil and gas industry and how much some of the senators on the committee are funded by them?
I think that that's a big part of it. And then the other part of it is that I think there's a deep-seated fear in the conservative psychology of the indigenous and dispossessed finally getting our power. One of the sort of subtexts that I heard in a lot of the Republican statements about Haaland was that somehow the first Native American cabinet secretary was going to take away their way of life and their economic systems and all of that, which obviously is a very ironic statement coming from.
And Julian, we got to go. Thank you so much for coming on with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is excerpted from my live radio shows on WNYC Radio. The live show is 10 a.m. to noon every weekday, and we're doing these national call-in specials that you just heard, America, Are We Ready?, every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern during Biden's first 100 days. Check your local NPR station to see if they're carrying the program, and if they're not, give them a call and say, hey, why aren't you carrying America, Are We Ready? From WNYC. Or you can listen online at WNYC.org. America, Are We Ready? Every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.